What's going on, guys? Welcome back to Wedding Film Wednesday. Got Andrew Guilford here.
It's been ages.
It's been a long time. We haven't filmed one of these in probably, what, six-ish weeks?
6 weeks. I mean, it's been so long that, like, last time I spoke to you, you were a free man. Now I'm speaking to you, you got a ring.
Yep. Got the old engaged on July 1st, so it's literally been at least 6 weeks since we filmed one of these. Glad to be back.
Been a hot second.
Glad to be back. And Andy Guilford here shot in Cabo last weekend. Talk about that. How was that?
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. That's what we were just talking about. It definitely a vibe. It was when my wife texted me, she's like, "How was your trip?" I was like, "Probably one of the most fun weddings and stressful weddings I've shot all in one." Yeah. Those two words went together really well. When I wasn't stressed, I was having a ton of fun. When I wasn't having a ton of fun, I was really stressed. So it was all or nothing with that wedding.
There's a lot of emotions.
But, yeah. A lot of emotions, man. Partying, happiness, tears of joy, tears of like emotion. Like it was great.
Was that your first travel wedding?
I shot a wedding in Cancun last year. Michael Lemley shot that one. Shot that one with me. So this is my second time. Got through security this time without getting checked. I kind of just wiggled my way around the scanner where they were making people put stuff through it, and no one stopped me. So
there you go, man. How does that work? Because I went to Arizona, and I was just like, you know, going on like a family kind of thing, and I brought my drone and like my camera, and the TSA every time ripped through my bag, and like I had to take everything out and go back to the start of the line, put everything in those bins. Did you get ripped apart? So did you check it in?
That happened to me in Charlottesville. So Charlottesville is a real small airport. They only had like three guys working it the morning that I left last Thursday. And they actually, like, you know, if you have a computer, if you have anything bigger than like a phone or whatever, cameras are good, you know, your drone's fine. But I didn't tell them about like my miniature tripods and light stands I had packed up. So like they got it through, and they like, oh no, they opened my thing up and they're like, oh, this has got to go. And so they took everything out, just that stuff, and put that through a bin. And they wanted me to scan my mixer audio recorder as well. The guy's like, this thing looks like a taser. I was like, a lot of my stuff looks like weapons. And then I pulled out a quarter inch adapter. I'm like, this thing looks like a bullet from like a, you know, 50 caliber. And the guy's like, what? You can just see on his face. The guy was like, I don't know if I should laugh or like if I should check more of your stuff, but
you better get strip searched.
They about to be like, take him down. But yeah, that's once that was done, nothing else got stopped or checked. On the way back from Cabo, I didn't want that bag to be scanned, so I just checked it. It turned out to be fine. They lost my luggage at one point. I had to go back and get it the next morning.
Was there any gear in that luggage that
I
got lost?
No, I mean, not stuff I absolutely needed. I had all my cameras, all my cards to record on, batteries to record on that were like fully charged, all that good stuff ready to go for the wedding. And I think I even still packed like an emergency charge, like a one battery charger for my camera. But everything else was in the big bag, the big suitcase. So all of my chargers, all of my cords, clothing, and everything else that was battery stuff that shouldn't be checked.
Did you keep your cards on your carry-on?
Cards were on me with carry-on. My SD actually brought my 4 terabyte SSD with me to offload footage like every single day after I shot.
Nice.
That stayed with me at all times. Man, I think this is the most organized I've ever been for any type of trip.
Love it.
It was really fun. Running joke, I'm the least organized person in my family. I'm the least structured, all of that good stuff. And yet the bride and groom sat down with me for breakfast the morning I left, and she's like, "You are the most punctual, organized person I've ever met." I'm like, "Bitch, you know, okay, thank you.
You do organize your footage, so..."
Only an amateur doesn't organize their footage. If you don't organize your footage in 2022, you're gonna be out of business by 2023.
What'd you say? All right, got it. So today, let's talk about let's get into the meat of the matter. Let's talk about your ideal couple and how, you know, that's kind of transitioned from, you know, maybe when you first started, what you thought you wanted, to now working with a couple that you absolutely loved. What is that process for you? What do you look for in your ideal couple?
Yeah, man. So I actually don't have my whiteboard ready. like I said,
it's all good, bro.
I was gonna lift it up and be like, you know, you see, like circle stuff, and I have like that little sound effect of the marker. No, so I guess taking a step back, I think our industry, for all the ways that it's moving forward and progressing and starting to get it, you know, to get its getting the videography name out there as a vendor that's absolutely needed, not just a luxury. I think one of the areas we are leading a lot of new people astray, and even keeping veterans, people who've done this 10 plus years, and then people like you and me who are kind of in that, like, I think we've gotten over that mid-career hump, like, okay, we know we can be sustainable, we know we can do this for 5, 10, 15 more years if we want. Right. I think even people in that range, I think basically everyone, starters all the way through veterans, I think a lot of people are being held back mentally in their ability to push forward, because we are teaching anyone and everyone who listens that, oh, you need to attract your ideal client. And all of us are going, okay, what is that? And most of the time that comes down to make more money, someone who's going to pay you more money. And that's probably like the biggest one I see, you know?
Right.
We're always talking about push forward, raise your prices, elevate the industry, book your ideal client, stop getting ghosted and all this stuff. I'm like, these are just generalizations that like all of us go through. All of us meet people that can't afford us. We all have people that ghost us. And I don't think there's a one size fits all fix it solution. And so to that, I would say when we're talking about the ideal client, I think there can be like a list of 15 things. And from wedding to wedding, this one wedding and this one couple that you love might check off 3 or 4, you know, maybe 6, 7, 8, 10 of those boxes. Whereas the next couple that comes along only checks off like 2, right. You know, pays well and they love my work. That's it. The venue's ugly. The wedding day goes poor, like all these different things. But then the next wedding's like, they pay my rates. They love me. They love my work. Amazing venue, close to me. Awesome planner, you know, all these different things start adding up that like really on paper builds up to like, it has the potential to be this like phenomenal wedding. And then even still the wedding day runs behind, all this stuff could happen. Yeah. So, I mean, it's just the ideal wedding even is, you know, even in after the wedding, it's like part of the ideal wedding is having a wedding that goes well. Like everything on paper can be amazing pre-wedding, and then the wedding happens and it's like, I don't want to talk about it because there was so much potential for it and everything just fell flat. So, I mean, nah, I could go on and on. Try not to ramble, but.
So what do you think about, like with your ideal client? Like, obviously, I think when you start out, one of the biggest things is going full time, being a wedding filmmaker. And like, you need to hit a certain threshold to be able to do that. But also be realistic with it. Like, you don't need necessarily $100,000 a year to be full time doing it. I mean, you might be like scraping by, but as you build, you don't need $100,000. You need maybe, you know, 50, 60, and I do think that you want your ideal client. You need to write out and figure out what that is. But there, I think in the beginning, especially, you might need to take some stuff to be able to hit that. But you don't want your work to reflect like what you don't want to shoot. So I do feel for like people in those beginning stages of trying to get ideal clients, but you might not have that demand yet. Where, you know, we've been doing it for however long, you know. Six, seven, 8 years or whatever. And we had like that demand is there. So it's easier to like weed through and find those ideal clients. What would your advice be to someone starting out that, you know, wants to go full time? Would you recommend that they maybe stay in their part-time job and only take ideal clients, or take other weddings as well and maybe just not post those? What's your thoughts on that?
So I have a friend in Texas who's starting to shoot stuff. He's trying to get more and more into weddings. I don't think he wants to do it full time. Like, he does a lot of other video work.
Yeah.
But I know he wants to shoot more and more weddings. And one of the things I shared with him is, I was like, if I was doing this from the, you know, starting from scratch again, I would do it the same way I did it, except even more. I would take 40 weddings in my first year. And this is like contrasting advice. Something that I share with people that straight up ask me, how, like, what would you do in my shoes? Or what is some advice to someone trying to get into this full time?
Yeah.
And I would say, okay, these two statements contrast each other. One, take as many weddings as possible. because the more weddings you shoot, the more likely you're going to have content to choose from. If you shoot 40 weddings, your odds of having 6 to 10 solid weddings, probably even like upwards of 15, right. You have a really solid chance of having 15 solid weddings. That's tons of content, and you're going to get out there faster. You know, 30 weddings equals 30 photographers, 40 weddings equals 40 photographers.
Yeah,
if you're not working with the same one. So just networking alone, you're just getting, your name's going to get out there and your face, and 40 different days of 40 different people working alongside you is going to be then spread by word of mouth. That's huge. And so it's like, man, 30 weddings is a lot. 40 is that much more. But my contrasting piece of advice after take as many as possible is, don't get burned out. It's like, you shoot 40 weddings by yourself, you're gonna get burned out. Yeah. You know, after that, I think that first year of grinding, networking, shoot as much as you can so that you have options. You know, the sooner you can get away from the, do you have more work that you can show me type of questions from couples on a Facebook Messenger, you know, or an email, the better. Like my first 6 months, I had couples asking, do you have more? Do you have more? Because I was basically posting everything I had to show.
Right.
And even then, I only posted what I thought was good, or, you know, I want to book more like this. But I got out of that within like the first, after probably 12, 15 weddings, I didn't get that message anymore. Right. But I shot those 12 weddings in like a 6 month span. And then within that next year, I shot 35 more weddings. So I very quickly got out of that, let me see more work.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, I would definitely say, right. I like what you said about take as much as you can, but don't burn out. I think that you might need to have to burn out just to find what that line is for you. But it's going to be tough because, I mean, usually when you're first starting out, you do have like another job. Maybe it's a full-time job. So you're editing like between 7 and 10 PM after your job. So I do think take as many weddings as you can, try to find that line of burnout just so you know how much you're actually capable of doing. And then once you go full time, I would double down and like, yeah, take as many legit as you can and then pull back and raise your prices as, you know, the months and years go on for sure. And then you can be more picky about your clients and stuff. And not only
absolutely.
Like going through like this, you know, 40 weddings a year, not only are you going to network and like film a bunch of weddings, maybe some are good, but like you're going to run into every problem that you can run into as a wedding filmmaker.
Yeah. I would attribute shooting so many weddings early on as like to my success and to growing so quickly.
Yeah.
Because I, you know, in my very first year, I shot a bunch of weddings in 2017, and even 2017 I made a bunch of mistakes before I went full time in 2018.
Yeah.
And in my 35 weddings I shot in 2018, I deleted first dances and entire reception of couples. I didn't have audio for couples. Audio was absolute junk. I didn't hit record on letter readings. I didn't have lights. I just made so many. I mean, every wedding was like a big mistake.
Right.
And even to the point now where if like I make a somewhat big mistake, I can still mitigate it because like I have additional gear or like, you know, you've done it enough times. If something messes up, I've got something else to at least be a qualified backup. But I didn't have that early on. And I had to learn that by making the mistake. Whereas I feel like a lot of people now, like, I'm like, I feel like you don't have the excuse to know going in, lighting's really gonna help, but oh, I didn't use lighting for my first 30 weddings. Like, I didn't have someone saying, lighting will elevate your game. Right, no one said that to me. Whereas now I feel like there's so many resources out there for people. And they can listen to other people's horror stories. But even then, I think doing is going to be a lot more than just like listening and hearing about it. People can have all, people can be equipped with all the information and wisdom from us that like, you know, here's what we did in our mistakes. Here's how we learned. But until they do it themselves, they might have to still make those mistakes for them to actually be like, okay, it makes sense now. Here's how I can improve in these areas.
Yeah, there's a couple examples. Like I used to run a wireless lav system, and I know some people still do that, but I had a really bad one. And every time the ceremony would come, I would be holding my breath that the audio was like anywhere halfway decent. And it wasn't until I had a handful of weddings where the audio was like messed up or it was going in and out that I finally got like a wired system. Where like trusting the DJ's speaker as the only form of like, you don't get backup audio until the audio doesn't work. And then you start doing backup audio like every wedding. But it's running into those mistakes and understanding why people do certain things to really you know, do it yourself. So you're going to have to mess up. But that's part of like the process of.
That's definitely starting. Part of it. I would never tell people you can avoid these mistakes if I would never say that to someone. I would say like, here's how you can avoid it. But that's not guaranteed. I mean, shoot, there's still weddings where like, oh crap, this entire angle of the ceremony was out of focus.
Yeah.
Good thing I've got four other cameras, but right. like for the person who's like, I only had two and one of them's completely shot, you know, that's yeah. where they might, okay, that's where you pick up a third camera, or that's where like you have a second, or that's where you just make sure your shot's in focus before like you monitor your stuff. You don't just not look at it the whole ceremony. So yeah, hey, man, making mistakes is definitely part of this journey.
Yeah. I want to go back to the original ideal couple question here to wrap up. I just want to know what was you considered your ideal client maybe like a year, 2 years ago. And like now after you had like kind of like that epiphany wedding where it's like this couple's amazing. Like what is the traits that you want from your couples going forward?
Yeah, absolutely. So I have and actually created this list of what is ideal through like a tier of like 1 through 3 based on this is going to sound funny. Based on how our church looks at like different issues. Like we have 3 tiers of issues. We have like church issues. We have the issues that like the church is involved in, but like not directly related per se. And then we have 3rd tier issues of like the church should be vocal in it, but like it's not directly tied to like our core, how we run things in our church.
Yeah.
And then the second thing was, as I'm going through a rebrand, the girl doing my rebrand sent this thing of like, which of these like list of words do you feel like best describes your personality, best describes your couples, all these different things. So that when she sent me like a finalized, okay, based on what you gave me, here's what I've narrowed it down to. And it kind of showed, here are my 3 most important things to me. Here's kind of like my 2nd tier most important. Here's like my 3rd tier, like my absolute has to have, my wants, and then the bonus if I do get this. And so based on those 2 examples, I've created a list of here is what my ideal couple is. And so when someone reaches out, I'm looking at distance to the venue, what type of venue it is, the reputation of the venue. I'm looking at what their budget is. I'm looking at who their planner is, when the day is. Is it an off-season month? Is it not? Is it a Friday or a Sunday? Is it not? Like, oh, and I start checking stuff off.
Yeah.
And man, it's just, it is an endless possibility of, you know, every single wedding. I might have 5 couples in a row that have amazing weddings and I love each of their edits and they are all a dream to work with, but like all of them still checked off different ideal client boxes.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
They weren't all the same. And man, being a visual person, like I wish I could just display it. Like if I pulled up, be like, okay, so here's so-and-so and so-and-so. They checked off these boxes and I love their wedding. It's on my website. Here's another couple, their videos on my website, but they checked off these boxes, yeah. And yet they're still, to me, an ideal client. I want both of these people, even though they both offered and brought different ideal things to the plate and to the conversation. I really think people need to shift their mindset around that instead of saying, like, this is ideal and nothing else is. Yeah. It's like, you've got 20 things to consider.
Yeah, legit. Is there anything that, like, if you get an inquiry for a wedding and it has, like, is there anything that like would make you not take the wedding? That's like maybe they don't have a planner or like I don't know, someone that you didn't work well with in the past. Is there anything that like?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So again, I'm just gonna keep referring to this invisible list since I don't have my my whiteboard.
Your whiteboard.
It's like this couple would be like, dang, they got the budget. Okay, that's in like my tier one. They can pay me. That's a tier one thing right there for me. It's got to be. Yep, it's got to be there. It's close. Let's go.
Yeah, I love that.
Oh, it's on my wife's birthday. Can't take it. Taking it. Like, immediately eliminated. There's certain things like that will help me determine. Like, I might have some things that are, like, absolute must going for the couple. But then there's things that I'm like, I don't like this. I don't like working with this. I've had 4 or 5 bad experiences with some of the things that this couple is saying will be present at their wedding. Yeah. It'll be this type of ceremony, or it's at this specific venue that I know has crap lighting, terrible for audio. It's known for like audio cutting in and out. Those types of things I start weighing in. So I'm like, unless I know how to mitigate these issues and tier 1 and 2 will do it for me. I'm like, sometimes I'll be like, I might just not even take it. I'm like, not worth it. Not worth the stress to me. I'll pass on to someone else, and then I'll let that person know, here are the things you're up against. This is literally why I didn't take it. I'm letting you know that. And if you can mitigate these problems and, you know, work around it, find a solution, props to you. Like, I don't feel like dealing with that. Or I already have a wedding the day before or the day after. Another big deciding factor. Like, something could be local to me, but if I already have a super high-paying wedding that's 4 hours away, I'm not going to hog that wedding unless I'm like, I got to be there. I'm going to be dead. But you know what? It's going to be worth it. I'll just pass it on to someone else instead of having someone shoot it poorly and make money off it.
Yeah, and I think it's important to, like, find those things out that, you know, are like the things that you won't take a wedding, and to be able to be in a place where you're able to, like, not take them is huge. Being able to be selective is great.
There's, like, so much of stuff we're talking about. It's like, take everything you can. And yet I'm over here being like, you can pay me. Nah, I don't need, like, it's just, it all depends on where you're at.
Yeah.
In your
there's
business.
A transitional, like, period for sure.
Absolutely. And so much of, like, things for me that right now are absolutes. Like, you gotta be able, like, an absolute for me, I guess it's not an absolute. If I say 99% of the time they got to be able to pay me, that 1% of the time I'll take someone's wedding that they can't pay me, it's because I know it's a future investment. So if a couple can only pay me, oh, hey, I know you start at 6,000, our budget's 4. I'm taking a wedding next year where the couple's only paying me 4,000 and they're just getting a basic highlight, but they're still paying me 2 grand less. Why am I doing that? Because they're going to have a ton of famous people at their wedding.
Yeah. She's a former bachelor. So if LeBron James got remarried and he wanted you to shoot the wedding but didn't have the budget somehow, like, you're taking that wedding. Like,
it's absolutely strategic.
Right.
That's like, that falls into, like, my third tier. Like, do I give them a discount? And if so, why? Right. Well, planners freaking awesome. I mean, I'm doing that again. Another example, like, I could just keep going. I probably discount more than a lot of people think I discount, because that one wedding I might lose $2,000 on gets me that next wedding that pays me $5,000 more than my average wedding.
Right. Yeah.
So it's like it either balances out, or I still end up making more than I would have if I hadn't discounted somebody's wedding. But, like, I'm shooting a planner's wedding next year, next May, Prime Saturday. You know, Prime Saturday, big discount, but the wedding's only 20 minutes away. I shot at the venue. And their planner, who's already sent me 3 weddings that are paying me really nice. So I'm like, if I shoot her wedding and I knock it out, and I potentially shoot this other planner's wedding, who's getting married also in Cabo.
Yeah.
Like, if I shoot both their weddings, like, that will just solidify for them. Okay, not only has he done great work for our other clients, he's killed it for us.
Yeah.
And I think, as we've talked about, other people have talked about, we're not always our ideal client. I might want to charge $10,000. I might, if I take out a little bit of my savings and I got remarried, I might pay $5,000. But, like, I'm not paying my prices.
Right.
And so I'll shoot stuff for people that might not be able to afford me, because they're going to send me people that can afford me.
Right. That's smart.
It's all strategy.
Strategic. Yep. Love it. Yep. All right, guys. Well, we're going to wrap this up. If you're listening, we appreciate you. If you made it, you know, this far, leave a like and a comment on whatever, like, device you're on. If it's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, whatever, YouTube, we appreciate it. Leave a like and a comment. We're just trying to build this thing. We appreciate you guys. I want to build a little community here. We love it. And we'll talk to you guys next time. See you.
Slow growth.
That's it.